Welcome to the Friday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Paul Spohr, joined by Doug Thorburn. Doug, Merry Christmas, good sir. It is the debut of Chris Bryan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I just looking at Twitter and the explosion of everything. I mean, just Twitter, just the explosion of everything baseball. It's Chris Bryan Day. And
it's so great.
Kind of crazy.
It really is. I mean, I can't even imagine the pressure on him. Well, we'll spoil it early. He's already 0 for 3 with 3 Ks, which obviously, if you're listening to this, the game's probably already over, to be quite honest, because they're in the bottom of the sixth right now. We're going to be on for a good 40 minutes or so, and then I'm going to post it. So, you know, you'll probably know everything that happened. But listen, like I said, I cannot even fathom the pressure that is on this guy to try to come up and perform to the level that people want. I'm not at all surprised that, first off, you know, I could have seen a mid-tier guy doing this to him, but the fact that he's facing James Shields for his opener, good freaking luck. Not a guy who is overly reliant on some power fastball. He's going to beat you with the soft stuff, particularly that change, and he's embarrassing Bryan today. And, you know, I honestly, I don't fault Bryan. I almost feel bad given how much pressure and the stupid overreactions that are going to come with a 3-strikeout afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, there was so much pressure on him, and I got to say, it kind of irked me a little bit watching him walk up to his first major league at bat, and every single person in the crowd is standing up with their phones out. Not a single one is actually watching with their eyeballs this moment that's happening.
Just like, watch and enjoy.
Well, and aren't people good enough yet on their phones that they can set it in a spot and then actually watch what's going on, that they don't have to
and start watching through the phone?
Through their phone? Yeah. Yeah. It didn't make any sense to me. It was so ridiculous. People in amazing spots. The whole reason to record it with your phone is, I guess, to remember it or maybe to prove to someone that you were there. But you've now robbed yourself of the actual experience. I couldn't believe it. I was stoked just to be watching it on TV when it was happening, for crying out loud.
I think Louis C.K. does a bit on this where he's talking about his children and how all the ridiculous parents at his kid's school do that same thing. It's like, how about you just enjoy it? You get to watch it in 3D, for crying out loud. It's right there for you. So I agree with your point. You know, if you do want to record it, sure, hold your phone up, you know, kind of off to the side while you watch it. I don't really do that. I don't really record much anymore when I'm at an event, whether it's a concert or something like that. And if I do, it is kind of in the way you're saying. I'll hold my phone way up. Obviously, I'm super tall, so I can kind of get that really good angle there. And then I'm still watching. You know, I recorded a little bit of the Outkast concert I went to at ACL back in the summer, or I guess the fall that would be. But, you know, I don't want to just look through my phone when I'm at something. I'm lucky enough to be at something. I want to enjoy it. So I know we're kind of being get off our lawn old men types here, but I got to fully agree with you. It's absolutely absurd.
You have a huge advantage there. Not only do you have the long limbs and can you reach with the phone, but you can put the phone in a spot and then see over everybody to see what's going on. Most of us normal humans don't have that advantage. So
I'm very blessed in that respect, and I try to be mindful of the people that are behind me. And I'm like, listen, I know I'm super tall. I'll let some people in front, but you know, I'm not going to let everyone in front. I still like to be pretty close, but. Anyway, you know, all they got is a bunch of video of strikeouts right now for Chris Bryan, so maybe he'll give him something. Plus, I got to see him bomb out in Round Rock here a couple times last year, and I just kept that one for myself. Didn't even have to record it. I just enjoyed that one for the old eyeballs myself. But outside of Chris Bryant news, we do have some injury news to discuss, and it's some familiar names, but also some new ones. Let's start with Justin Verlander. He was slated to come back on Tuesday for the Tigers. That's been pushed back. Kyle Obstein going to stick in the rotation. This is becoming a pretty big issue, I think, for the Tigers, because it was supposed to be something that was minor. Remember when he was first injured, he didn't even go on the disabled list because he was just moved to the fifth starter role, and they figured that they could use him, I think, that Sunday, but then Verlander couldn't start that game, and now he's been pushed back again. This just kind of keeps getting pushed out, and I wonder if they don't want to admit that the triceps is a bigger deal than it really is, or what's going on. Do you have any thoughts on this as it relates to Verlander and as it relates to tricep injuries as a whole? Do they give you any sort of red flags or anything like that? Or is this just a case-by-case type of injury with triceps?
I think there's a lot of red flags here, and a lot of it is the unknown. know, team being secretive, you know, for all we know, we could try to be optimistic, but let's face it, usually when a team is secretive, that there's pessimistic reasons for it, and there are, you know, reasons of competitive advantage that they don't want to let people know that, oh, this is actually a concern. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to triceps, yeah, that doesn't sound like a big issue, but that's, you know, part of the kinetic chain. That's the link between the shoulder and the elbow. I mean, we don't know where it's spreading or what muscles or ligaments or tendons it's impacting at this point. I know so little about it. And we're talking about a guy who has the ability, but has spent the last 2 years playing way below where his ability is, way below his pay grade, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so the optimism of him being able to come back and be who he was, I mean, I'm really pessimistic at this point. I don't know what to expect from him.
Yeah, I really don't either. I came in, you know, still closer on the optimistic side than most folks. I thought with health, you know, with that core surgery past him, you know, way in the rear view, that would help. But it obviously now other injuries are flaring up. It's just, it's not looking good overall. And it's starting to make me sad, to be honest, not even from a fantasy perspective, but just from the fact that I love the Tigers and I love Justin Verlander and I want to see him pitch. I think every baseball fan should want to see him get back to, you know, as good as he can be. But I just don't know that it's coming. I just don't know that it's coming back at all. Sticking with the Tigers, I'm going to jump around on you just a little quick second here since they do fit with the same team. Victor Martinez, he sat on Friday in the sweet 2-1 game. Man, pace of play. Anyone who was interested in pace of play, they should have watched that Tigers White Sox game. Get David Price and Jeff Samardzija on the hill because that will make you forget anything about pace of play because they were dominating. It was excellent. The game was breezing. It was a fantastic game. But Victor Martinez didn't play because of the knee. Now, he missed some time in the Pittsburgh series, but that was easy to kind of cover up to say because of the DH. There is some thought out there that, again, they're being a bit secretive and kind of downplaying this with the knee. You hear Osmus say it's not too serious, but then he keeps missing time. So are you growing at all concerned about this injury to the knee for Victor Martinez?
The only time it's an injury that, you know, this guy's he's trying to come back from a surgery. So, you know, when you have an injury that was serious enough to require surgery and he's having issues in the same area, that's obviously a concern. That's something that, you know, you worry about to what extent has he gotten beyond or gotten through his rehab. As it was, he came back quicker than I expected. So
much.
If it's just going to, you know, cost him, you know, a couple of days here or there, not a big deal. I would hate to think that he came back too early and exacerbated it, but it's probably more of a maintenance thing, would be my guess. And he's worth, you know, carrying on your bench for a couple of days if that's going to, you know, save you the time on the DL.
Definitely. Yeah. You got to sit tight with Victor right now. I don't know because, like I said, I read some people on Twitter and it's just their opinion that they're concerned about this. For me, I'm kind of going with the Tigers and what they're saying. They're saying it's not a huge deal. They, you know, they can afford to kind of sit him here in the early go. I'm with you, though. My biggest concern would be I really hope he didn't come back too soon and exacerbate it because I'd rather had him miss the first 2 weeks of April altogether if that was going to help as opposed to rushing back. So stay tuned on Victor. Obviously, you can't cut him or anything like that. But then obviously stay tuned to RotoWire over the weekend because if he is going to miss extended time, you might want to get him out of the lineup because a four-game Victor might not be your best option, especially in a 10 or 12-team mixed league where there's usually some decent guys on the bench. Another guy who could you're going to have to stay tuned to RotoWire for news because he could go to the DL, and it's much more likely than for Victor, is Jose Reyes. Pulled up lame with a rib injury yesterday after running out of ball. And unfortunately, the guy just can't buy a break. I mean, he can't freaking stay healthy, and it's such a bummer. You know, it hasn't been honestly, though, with Jose Reyes, I don't think it's been as chronic as people believe. It's not like he's got a bunch of double-digit games played seasons under his belt. You know, he had the 93 in 2013 and the 36 in 2009. But when you look at his recent history, 160 in 2012, 143 in 2014. So two of the last 3 years, he's played super full seasons. He just hasn't been the Jose Reyes from his prime, which why would you expect him to be in his early 30s? I just wonder, do you even ever try to draft this guy? Or is he somebody that you're like, you know what, I'll put him on my list, but I'm not even looking to get him because I just don't think it's just too big of a risk. How do you deal with Jose Reyes?
You know, I was a big fan back in the late two. What do we even call that decade? The first decade of the 2000s.
I just say early 2000s, and I feel like it's understood. It's called the aughts, I believe. Is the technical?
Oh yeah, the aughts.
Technical term, you know, the zeros. I say to be silly sometimes. I'll say, you know, back in the zeros, but we'll go with early 2000s, which is the time I loved him too, and he was amazing. I mean,
yeah,
power and speed. Not amazing power, but 19 bombs out of somebody who's going to give you 64 stolen bases and a 300 average, which he did in 2006 season. That is a what was even the dollar value of that season? 122 runs as well. That's a $50 season.
You know, I play in a lot of slugging leagues and OBP leagues. So, you know, he was leading the majors in triples every year. He had 17, yep. 12, 19. His slugging, I mean, he had a 487 one year, a 475 Gross. One year. I mean, you pair that at shortstop with 60, 70 steals, you know, from a guy who's like 23, 24 years old, he was dynamite. And then, you know, then the injuries started cropping up, and my issue with him, and I started saying this around 2010 or so, and I've been saying it with him ever since, is that he's a hammy injury away from losing all of his value.
Bingo.
And that's the problem. He's a speed, I mean, I would say, I'm not going to say speed only player, but speed is such a major part of his game that something happens to his legs. And I believe he's had a few different issues with his hamstrings. That just saps him of so much value. So that's always my worry with him. So I've pretty much stayed away for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, I would say. But for a while, I was totally enamored.
100% agree. Right down. You know, obviously, it was easy to be interested in him when he was amazing. But it was also, you know, you had to invest, so you had to be willing to kind of take the chance with him. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, there came a point when we switched from the zeros to the tens, where I'm with you. I kind of went, you know what? I don't think I'm going to risk it anymore. And I really haven't. Like I said, I always have Reyes properly, what I believe is properly ranked, you know, in the upper tier of shortstops. But if he's the last one standing there, I usually just go to a different position. It's just someone I've avoided. And now it looks like he could hit the DL with a rib injury. I don't even know who would replace him. I they don't have much middle infield depth in Toronto. Maybe Steve Tolleson or something. And I don't know that you need to be super interested in that. But for now, like I said, just stay tuned to the RotoWire news to see if he does hit the DL, because then you got to make bigger decisions there. One thing I will say, though, one name that I will mention if you are going to have to replace him for a DL stint is Jose Iglesias for the Tigers. He's off to a great start. And I'm not sure that he's necessarily going to keep hitting at the same level, you know, that we've seen so far. He's probably hitting like 500 right now. Obviously, he's not going to hit that level. I'm not saying he's going to be a 300 hitter the way he was in 2013, but even 275 with his speed that he's showing early on, his willingness to run, and the health, that's a perfectly adequate replacement in terms of what you're going to find on the waiver wire right now. So I like Jose Iglesias as a replacement if you do have to shelve Reyes.
And I like what it's going to do for Dalton Pompey and his Bingo. Value, because I could see him slide up that, you know, to maybe raise his vacated spot in the order, whether he's batting first or second. He's been moved a lot around a lot the first 10 days or so. They've had him everywhere. But I could see him sliding towards the top now if Reyes is on the DL.
That's a great call. And honestly, you know, I know they've been batting Donaldson two sometimes, but not always. There's a chance that both Devon Travis and Dalton Pompey could benefit from this, because they could move up to the 1-2 on those days when Donaldson isn't batting two, because then they do the 3-4-5 of Bautista, Donaldson, and Encarnacion in some form or fashion. So this could benefit both of their little spark plugs that have been going crazy there. Dalton Pompey and Devon Travis have been fantastic for Toronto, kind of while the big bats have laid quiet. Encarnacion is not hitting at all. Bautista got a little bit going this week. Donaldson got a little bit going this week, but they have not been the huge bats that we know they're going to be. Wait till that offense gets going, though. It's going to be filthy. Yeah. Another big injury, and this one really stings because I love this guy's game. Carlos Gogo Gomez is down with a hamstring injury. He is officially DL'd. That's a major blow, obviously, to fantasy teams. He's a first-round pick. But also the freaking the Brewers are going to take it on the chin here, because it hasn't been good out there. They're 2-7, nothing's really working. Gene Segura and Adam Lind are really the only guys that are hitting. Braun hasn't been hitting. Lucroy's been a disaster so far. Not really worried about these guys. I'm just saying in terms of what's been going on so far, it hasn't been great, and now they lose one of their biggest bats in Gomez. How do you feel about Gomez's hamstring injury, and is this something that you would be willing to sell out of him now, even if it's selling low, because you're worried about a hamstring with a guy who gets a lot of value from speed?
It definitely does worry me. I wouldn't put him in the same category as a Reyes, where all of his value comes from speed, because, you know, this is a guy who can hit 25 bombs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if the expectation is 40 steals out of this guy, which, you know, when you draft him, you're thinking 35, 40 steals. Now it's looking like, what do you really expect from him now? Like 15?
I mean,
maybe, you know, yeah. And that's if at some point in the year his legs are feeling okay. I mean, I think he'll be a fine hitter, but that just turns him in my mind from a first round player to a third round player right off the bat before we even see, you know, how severe this is. Now who knows? Maybe he comes back and he's fine, but I think that's just a major blow, and especially to the Brewers, I see a lot of problems with what's going on right now in Milwaukee, and
it ain't good.
It's gonna be a long summer, I think.
I think it could be, and I thought this was a team that could be all right. I never had them as a contender for this year, but I thought that they could be kind of like one of those just annoying teams that you can't expect to sweep or anything like that, and they're going to take series once in a while and kind of be in that 78 to 82 win range, which, again, is not a great season, but it's certainly not a complete bottoming out either. And I think they have too much talent to completely bottom out, but I don't think it's going to be even fringe contention for them, especially if Gomez is out for a long period of time. Let me ask you this, though. I'll flip it. Is there any chance that you would try to buy low on him? If you could maybe get him, let's say, for a fourth or fifth round kind of pick, you know, somebody that you were drafting in that area, would you try to buy low on him? Or is this something that you're just saying, you know what, based on the team situation and the hamstring being, you know, affecting one of his biggest assets, I'm going to pass altogether? How do you feel on that one?
That's really tough. I mean, obviously, it depends on the price and the league settings and all that stuff. In general, I probably wouldn't, because from, you know, the small reports that I've gotten or that I've heard or read or whatever, it sounds like it could be a tear. It's the kind of thing that's probably not going to heal throughout the season, or at least not to the point where he's going to be all right.
Yeah,
now,
just,
who knows?
It's just going to get to a point where he can play, is what you're saying, not actually be 1,000% healed.
Right. That's what I'm afraid of. Now, again, there's information we don't know, but you know, you have to kind of assume that any owner of Gomez is going to want a certain percentage of return on value, and I'm not willing to give that right now.
That's fair. I think I'm in the same boat right now. As much as I love him, I don't think I'd want to take the risk. I'll stick with what I got and go from there. Last bit of news here is another guy injury, but this is on the positive end. It looks like he's coming back. It's Devin Mesoraco. He's been out with a hip. He's unlikely to play Friday, but he's supposed to come back during the weekend at some point against the Cardinals. This was a guy that I wasn't super high on coming into the season. I just worried about the health profile. It's never been good at all. In fact, even last year during that huge breakout season, I don't think it was talked about enough that he still only managed 114 games. It was just that he was so good that he put up what looks like a full season of numbers with the 25 homers and 80 ribbies. You know, you get that from a catcher, you're absolutely loving it, but he had to smush a lot of production into just 440 plate appearances. I know catchers play less, but that's still a lot less than even the highest catchers who are playing, what, upwards of 135, 140 games. So I was just worried about Mesoraco from a health standpoint. It hasn't been good so far. He's only played six of their games, but at least he's on his way back. How do you feel about Mesoraco?
Well, you know, coming into the year, I was higher on him, but I have to admit, you know, exactly what you said, some people aren't paying enough attention to it. I think I wasn't paying enough attention to the games played. I was looking at more of the raw counts and saying, this is what I want out of a catcher. And, you know, I'm an upside whore. I'm all about the risk reward. So, you know, I saw, you know, this is potentially a 30 home run catcher. This is, you know, so I feel like I invested pretty heavily with him. I'm really worried when it comes to a hip injury for a catcher. We hear all the time about catcher's knees. This was first reported as a thigh injury, and then it was the hip injury. He took that foul ball off his face mask that gave him a mild concussion in early spring training. I'm not willing to say this guy's a magnet for injury yet, but he plays a position that is a magnet for injuries. And when it comes to the hip, that's something that this guy has to squat, you know, 150 times a game, and he's going to have to squat with a bum hip. That doesn't really sound like a recipe that is going to be conducive to long-term success. And he doesn't play in the AL, so his bat can't be hidden in the DH spot.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. It's because it's also like they can't teach him a new position and throw him over to first because they got a decent guy over there. You know, that first baseman they've got is pretty decent. So you're right. It's a rough situation. And I agree with you. I'm not even necessarily saying Mesoraco, you're injury prone, whatever. The position he plays, you're inherently going to be injury prone over at that spot because it's so tough. Catchers just get beat up. So I'm hoping for the best out of him because I actually have him in two leagues where his keeper price was just too much to pass up. You know, I was down on him, as I mentioned, but the fact that I could keep him at such a low price in those two leagues, obviously I'm not going to turn that away. So I want to see him get back on the field. I think this Reds offense is better than people believed coming into the season. Obviously a huge believer in Votto myself. Todd Frazier looks like at least the power is legit from last year. I think he'll get that batting average back up. I think he's hitting around 200 right now. And then Bruce, Hamilton, Bird, even Phillips has like a, what, 7 hitter. That's pretty good. So I think the Reds offense can be pretty solid, and they need Mesoraco in the middle there.
Yeah, they do. That's huge for them. And like you said, it was really too easy to overlook the games played issue with him. And I think that's a mistake that I made.
RotoWire listeners are winning serious money at DraftKings.com. Baseball season is heating up, and you too could be winning serious cash. Unless you're playing against me, I'll crush y'all. You need to check out DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-day fantasy sports site. Use the promo code DVR when you deposit for a free contest entry today. Doug, that leads right into our main chat of the day. We are going to talk some DFS here, and we are going to talk specifically about DraftKings. And something that you've noticed right off the bat, I've heard you talk about it on Baseballholics, you mentioned it to me. I thought I was seeing it, but to be fully honest, I wasn't sure. I definitely didn't realize to the extent with which this phenomenon is happening. What have you noticed at DraftKings this year that is massively different from 2014?
Well, it's the way they're formulating their player prices. So it reminds me a lot, actually, now, the changes they made. It reminds me of Draft Street a little bit. And, yep. You know, DraftKings bought Draft Street and just kind of absorbed them. They, you know, took away the game. That was my favorite game, and they would adjust like crazy. They would adjust based on the opponent. They would adjust based on the ballpark. They would adjust based on the platoons. And with them, it wasn't even around to the nearest 100. It would be like $2,726. It was
it was nuts. They must have had some sort of formula that punched out those awkward numbers and said, you know what, we're not going to round them off. We're just going to go with this number.
Yeah, and it was.
Go ahead.
It was really cool that they did that. And, you know, I don't know everything that went into their algorithm, but you had to sort of decide, okay, I think they're overweighting this, or I'm going to give more credence to, you know, some other aspect. If anything, they almost went too far with it. And that's why I really like what DraftKings is doing. I don't know the extent they're using, like, head-to-head matchups or platoons or that kind of stuff, but they're definitely using ballpark, and they're definitely using the quality of the pitcher that guys are facing. Mm-hmm. And that is really changing prices. And where it smacked me over the head was last weekend, Cubs at Rockies. Basically, every single guy in the lineup was over $5,000 for the cost to acquire. And some guys, a bunch of guys were over six. There was one day where Zoe was 6,600.
Yeah, I got to interrupt you on that because that's a big difference too. They've raised their ceiling. I don't think there were $6,000 hitters last year. I thought the cap.
I don't ever remember one.
I thought it was in the 5,000s, maybe $5,500 Trout, but I don't think we ever saw 6,000 last year. I could be wrong, but I really don't think we did. And this year we've seen guys popping up at 6 multiple times. I've seen Trout do it. He's down at 5,800 today. You mentioned the Rizzo. We're going to see studs in Colorado when they go out there. They're really going to be pushed up. Now, Colorado's in Los Angeles this weekend, so we can't check and see what's going on for this weekend. But I agree with you. I think that we are seeing much bigger shit. That was the thing that I noticed. I noticed that the ceiling was moved up. I didn't realize that they were making such stark changes based on venue and pitcher, which I kind of like. I mean, I figured it would happen because it has happened at other sites. DraftStreet, I played there as well. but there are some sites don't touch it at all, which can create some really nice, leverage that you can benefit from. But I like that they're manipulating it. It changes the game and it keeps it really fun. I mean, this is already super hard and fun and enjoyable. This just adds another layer to it. So I personally enjoy it, even though it technically does make the game tougher.
I really like it personally. I think it adds a huge layer of strategy, and it really helps with the competition. Because honestly, before the strategies that people would use, they didn't take that much research. It was pretty lazy. It took 10 minutes. You see who's playing Colorado, who's got really weak pitchers going, you know, who's playing in San Diego. You pick your guys accordingly. Most teams would just if Colorado was playing at home, people would just stack like crazy, guys from both rosters. It worked really well. It worked too well. It was annoying. It was, if you did it, then it was boring because you just matched up with everybody else. If you didn't do it, you lost. So you kind of had to. And it became so pervasive that, you know, again, anyone could do it. Everyone did do it. And if you didn't, to me, it kind of made the game less fun. Now, especially, I really like the higher caps because I felt that last year was a little bit too easy to have a badass team.
To have the stud bats in there, even when you were using stud pitchers, I agree.
Yeah, it was really easy. And now you can still get those guys, but you have to make some choices and you have to go for maybe your sleepers down the list a little bit. And anything that spreads out the talent, I think, is a good idea. Because when everyone could get studs, tons of overlap, and it was basically, okay, which of the studs do you have today? Do you have Stanton or did you have Trout? You know, and that's boring.
And then it comes down to like three players, which I don't like either. You know, everyone's using these same core four or five guys, well, then it's all really coming down to your Steven Vogt pick. And, you know, I don't love that either. I like that, you know, there are going to be some winning lineups out there that don't have any stud hitters. They have all a bunch of mid-tier guys with some stud pitchers. And then there are going to be people who will say, you know what, I'll go for the bottom barrel pitchers and get some studs. I mean, I agree with you. It really kind of changes things quite a bit. But this is going to lead in, obviously, to us making some picks for Friday. The one thing that is difficult about it, though, is that it's harder to pick for the future now. Because they won't necessarily have all the guys available for a Saturday lineup, or I can't tell you that I like player X at this price for Saturday and Sunday because he could definitely change. So we're going to focus on Friday, and I want to. It is a bit of an ace day now. A couple of the aces have already pitched today. We've seen James Shields on the mound for San Diego, David Price, Jeff Samardzija. Samardzija probably not. He's not their actual ace. That's Chris Sale. But you know, we're talking about stud pitchers are going today, which also adds a fun wrinkle. So we're going to talk about one non-ace that we like. So we're going to use the threshold of $8,000, and I'll tell you the guys who are above that right now. That's Michael Wacha, Jake Peavy, Sonny Gray, Julio Teheran, Johnny Cueto, Max Scherzer, and Clayton Kershaw. Kind of hilarious that Jake Peavy's in there when you look at the rest of those guys, but maybe that has to do with Arizona because they're not a great hitting team. So we're going to pick one of the other guys, one of the guys below that we would like to use today as an SP2, and I'll give you the first pick. Actually, you already know mine, so I'm technically not giving you first pick. I just want to hear yours first.
This one's tough. There's two guys that I'm kind of dodging between, and those two guys are Jared Weaver and Jimmy Nelson.
See, I want you to talk about Nelson first because I want to ask you one thing about that. The only reason that I didn't love him is because he's facing the team for the second time in a row. Both of his games are against the same team, and this time he gets the A lineup. He kind of got a B lineup that first time he faced the Pirates. But he also had a new pitch, so it's not like he was just using the old stuff against a non-full lineup. That spike curve that he had was devastating and really caught the attention of folks. But it was a catchless lineup, so you know that definitely took a little bit of punch out of it. But talk to me about him going up against Pittsburgh again.
Well, you pretty much said it. I agree with pretty much everything you said. I mean, we'll see if he actually can dominate them the second time. I think that's interesting. I think his price is amazing on DraftKings. It's $6,600, so it gives you a lot of flexibility to go after something else. Whereas someone like Weaver is $7,500, mm-hmm. So it's an extra $900. That's going to cost you a hitter somewhere. Now Weaver's playing Houston. Weaver's not a big strikeout guy, but anybody playing Houston becomes a big strikeout guy.
Yeah.
So. So I like it for that reason. Even though he's on the road, and I know it's a home road splits suck, this is the one exception I'll make for him on the road.
that the one thing I love about Nelson that you talk about, and you mentioned it with Weaver kind of on the other end, is that Nelson can be a strikeout guy. Now, he wasn't a huge strikeout guy last year at 7.5 per 9, but that's a pretty good number to kind of start from. And at that price, I am really surprised that he's not higher after his first outing, and the fact that he's been kind of a strikeout guy coming up. That is something that he can do. If you can get strikeouts at that price, he's somebody I looked at too. I almost picked him myself. 6,600. That could turn out really nicely. I think a lot of people will be going to that well today because of the price and because of how great he was in his first outing. But just because a lot of people are doing it doesn't mean that it's wrong either. That's the one, you know, that's another thing I like about sometimes the obvious pick is the right one. And I think people need to be aware of that and not so afraid of it because they just want to fade whatever's going on there. So keep an eye on Nelson. My guy is J-Hap, excuse me. He doesn't go by J-A anymore, which is weird, by the way. I don't know. If you're going to have J period, A period, how is that not J-A Hap? Whatever. That's meaningless. Doesn't matter. I don't know why we're talking about it. Sorry.
It's his name. But he can say it. He can call it whatever he wants.
You're right. If he wants I'm Bill Hap, but it says J-A. It's Bill. Sorry. It's Bill.
That's how I pronounce it. Deal with it.
I pronounce it as Bill. That's just the way we do it in my family. Okay. Sorry, Bill. Anyway, Bill Hap, I like him today going up against Texas. He's at home. Now, he's not a huge strikeout guy either, but I think he's better than the one strikeout we saw in his debut. He was sharp in Oakland. He just wasn't getting strikeouts, just getting a lot of weak contact, 11 ground balls, 14 fly balls. So pretty split there, but a lot of weak contact in the air. There were not a lot of long shots there. 7 hits, 2 runs, no walks in that 6-3. He took a no decision there. So he didn't score huge, but he doesn't cost a lot either. So even a repeat of that, it wouldn't be great. But you could live with it. It certainly wouldn't kill you. I think he can be markedly better because I think that this is a guy who can miss bats. Again, we talk about – I mentioned about 7.5 Ks per 9 for Jimmy Nelson last year. That's where Hap's been the last couple years and more or less actually throughout his career. He's been as high as 9. He had a strikeout per inning all the way back in 2012. So he has strikeout potential. This Texas lineup doesn't really scare me, especially in Safeco. So I like J-Hap as a good SP2 tonight. What do you think? You buying in on that at all, or are you off on him?
I'm not real big on him, but I don't have an amazing reason for it. You know, I mean, I think that his ability to kind of shut down Prince Fielder is offset by Adrian Beltre hitting lefties better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Prince Fielder is kind of shutting himself down as far as power. We haven't seen any power from him yet at all. He's hitting 400, I think. But zero power
knocks.
So far.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, until I see power from him, you know, coming back from that serious neck injury, I can't trust that he's Prince Fielder yet. So I'm not even sure how big of an impact that is. So maybe, you know, having Beltre in there makes outweighs it a little bit. I haven't taken a good enough look at all their team splits to see how it messes with them. But I'm not J-Hap's biggest fan overall. I would probably go for, say, like a Nelson over him. But see the previous comment about being an upside whore.
I actually like Nelson's counterpart a little bit too, Vance Worley at 6,100. And I know he was thrashed in his debut, but we already talked about Carlos Gomez isn't going to be in that lineup. They haven't been hitting. So, yeah, they got him for 6 runs the first time around because this is just a rematch between these two here. But, yeah, they got him for 6 runs and 6 1/3 the first time around. I don't think they're going to be able to do that so much again tonight. I like Worley at home in a rebound situation as well. So we gave you 4 names there that you can look at if you don't want to spend on the Kershaw, Scherzer, Cueto, Tehran, Gray, Waka, and Peavy. Those are all the 8,000 or higher guys. Kershaw or Scherzer, if you were gonna spend on one of the 5-digit guys.
Well, if I was gonna go for one of the big do I have to go 5 digits? Because I would rather have Kluber at 9,800.
Yeah, I agree. But what if I make you take one of the guys that's 5 digits or higher, so 10,000 or above?
Would oh, man. Kershaw or Scherzer right now, that's really tough just because the options are so good. Give me Scherzer because Philadelphia is awful.
Philadelphia is pretty bad. And Colorado hitting all right on the road so far. But again, it's because they haven't had a lot of time in Coors to have that big adjustment. That's why I wasn't too surprised when they dominated in that first series in Milwaukee, too, because everyone knows that Colorado isn't great on the road, but it's only after they've had a bunch of time in Coors to then adjust from it. Now let's talk some hitters. They can be tough on days with a lot of good pitchers going because, you know, listen, there's going to be guys out there who hit homers off of those 8,000 plus guys I was talking about. You know, PV specifically probably, but even the Teron, Kluber, Cueto, Scherzer, and Kershaw, there's going to be guys who put up decent days, but finding them, picking them out, that's tough. And so you pretty much want to avoid them. Well, that obviously cuts the pool. So let's talk about some hitters that we like today. And by the way, now I'm a little bit twisted here because I mentioned Vance Worley, but then I saw earlier that it was supposed to be Jeff Locke. So,
supposed to be Locke, yeah. As you said that, I checked my lineup because I had Ryan Braun in, who's been terrible, but I'm like, well, against the lefty, I gotta get a shot, right?
Yeah.
As soon as you said that, I go to double check.
So I got Worley here on DraftKings. I got RotoWire lineup page showing Worley. So I got to make an adjust. If Worley's in, then scratch my first pick, which was Jonathan Lucroy, similar to what you're saying. He hasn't been good, but give him to me against a lefty all day. Let me see if I can find some info. Sorry, this is on the fly because things have changed here.
And ESPN still has Locke listed. That's what I was going off of. But if that's changed, I agree. That changes the dynamic of all of the Brewer players. I had Lucroy rostered as well. So
I still got Locke going here. Let's see. I've still got Locke. So let's operate under that. Pardon me on the Vance Worley thing. I don't think he's going today. Nope. There it is. The Pirates Twitter page. Vance Worley will start for Jeff Locke tonight.
Oh, so no Locke, but Worley's in.
Worley's in. So for me, that's a scratch on Lucroy. I'm going to go ahead and move elsewhere, save some money that way. That's kind of a – I don't know what happened to Locke. So anyway, make your adjustments there. Let's talk some other hitters then. I'll go first with my other guy then. It's Josh Reddick, who I like, going for Oakland against Jeremy Guthrie. Never been a Jeremy Guthrie guy. I know he can go out there every once in a while and look really sharp. Believe me, I've had many stacks against Jeremy Guthrie that haven't panned out, but more that have panned out. So I'm not even stacking the A's here. I'm just going for a low-dollar lefty in the outfield, Josh Reddick. And not even low-dollar, $4,400. It's not expensive, but it's not cheap. That's another that goes right back to what you're talking about because I think Josh Reddick the other day was in the 3,000s, and now he's all the way back up because he's facing a 3,600 2 days ago, now facing a right-hander and a bad one at that. He's all the way up to 4,400. So that gets back to your point about the pricing. It's really changing, but I still like him here. He's a power guy. I love, anytime you can get a guy who can go yard, that goes yard early, you're set for the day. I love the power guys because you just never know when the stolen bases are going to come. I prefer power guys. I love Josh Reddick. It looks like he's healthy. He's playing great defense out there. So I'm going for him against Jeremy Guthrie. Who do you got as one of your hitters while I adjust my Lucroy business here? Because he was $3,900. I was loving him at that price.
Yeah, one. I was loving Braun at $4,200, but now I'm gonna have to make some major changes.
Gosh. Anyway, So what do you got? What do you got going then with one of your first hitters?
Well, not to stack A's, but I got Mark Hanha. I've been using him for the last 10 days or so. I feel like, or at least the last week or so. He hits second every day. He hits righties and lefties. He's not a world beater, but he's pretty damn useful. You know what I mean? That he's exactly the kind of underrated guy that is a good lineup staple because he opens up other possibilities. So $3,500, I love the price. He's sitting second again today against Guthrie.
He's scored every day I'm looking at the last 10 games log on DraftKings. It's not a full 10 games yet, obviously, but all of the ones that they list from 4-8 to 4-15, he's scored every day. Now, there's been some huge days, 23, 26, 12, and then the rest are single digit. But if you get a guy who just scores every day, you gotta love it at $3,500, and his price is only slowly rising. It was 3,000 on 4-8, and now it's just up to $3,500 today. So they're slow to react on him. I like that pick with Canha. Good call there. My next one will be. Let's see here. I don't have a lineup yet, so I'll put this one out. This is an official pick because I don't know if he's gonna play, but I'm riding Alex Guerrero every day that he plays at this price. It's so low.
Well, the problem is he's not starting. He's coming in hitting pinch hit homers.
That, you know what? I had him in every lineup that day, and obviously because I was so psyched. It was against a lefty, and you know, I had all my lineups. Then I learned that he isn't playing. The problem with a guy like that is that when he's not playing, you have to make so many adjustments because it's so inexpensive. Then you have to probably take out a high price guy. So that part's a little bit worrisome. If you do like him, maybe don't set your lineup until you know if he's in it. But when
he's on the West Coast, which can be a killer because by the time his game goes and you actually find out what time he's playing, your options have been trimmed. So
big time
being able to finagle is tough.
I would never do it, but God, what if I'd have just left him in, you know, at 2,600 and said, what if he gets a pinch hit at bat? But, you know, it's just a bad probability play, so it would have been a bad process being rewarded by a good outcome. So I'm glad I didn't leave him in there. I'll go with Lonnie Chisenhall then for my second guy, $4,000 third baseman facing Mike Pelfrey. So I'm picking on some very bad pitchers today, which is obviously something that you should be doing. He's not off to a great start this year. He's not a great player overall either. I mean, he had that big run last year that really kind of put him on the map, but he's still much better against righties. He's facing a righty, one that, again, I don't find to be particularly strong. That Indians lineup has been kind of hot and cold, nothing really great so far, but I think that they're going to be good overall, and once they get going, I think that he can really excel, so particularly against righties. So give me Lonnie Chisenhall against Mike freaking Pelfrey. Who else you got?
Well, it's funny because I said Jimmy Nelson earlier as far as, you know, someone I like, and so much of that was the price. Well, because of the price, I like a bunch of Pirates too, guys facing him today. Mm-hmm. So Pedro Alvarez, he qualifies at first and third, and he's 3,500. You were saying before, just a guy you can pop one. He's a perfect candidate for that, especially somebody who throws kind of hard. And then Gregory Polanco, he hasn't had the best start, but 3,200 is dirt cheap for him. So once again, they can kind of open up that flexibility, whether you want to go big on your pitching or you want to spend on some of their elite guys. And that's something else I've noticed. Again, I've noticed so much fluctuation day to day. Last year, I thought the prices were much, much more stable. But I've also noticed, like I said, the last weekend, it was these crazy prices. And then like the last two or three days, a lot of the elite players are really affordable. They've been less than 5,000. So you know, I feel like every single day I have to adjust and readjust and roll with just whatever is out there. And
it's crazy.
That's fun. That's fun to me. I really enjoy that. I think that's a good aspect of it overall.
I completely agree that it is fun. And like you said, you really do have to adjust. Obviously, you can't plan too far ahead because you just don't know what price they're going to put out there. I was trying to look at some value guys for my for one of my pieces at RotoGrinders, a site we both write for. You know, trying to guess some of the value plays on the mound for later in the week. And, you know, when you go to all, you can usually find the players, even the pitchers who aren't pitching, but some of them are off the board because if they pitch on a Friday, DraftKings doesn't even have them there because they don't want you to think that that's going to be the price. So, yeah, they're really diligent about adjusting. And I bet you it has something to do with what you mentioned early about the Draft Street acquisition, where somebody out from that Draft Street team probably said, listen, we should do dynamic pricing a little bit more often here. And they're listening. So who was that second name that you mentioned? I'm sorry.
It was Polanco. But real quick, one other point I want to make about that. Because I wrote about this, I'm writing about the DFS stuff over at BP, and someone brought up a really good point about how for any casino or any, whether it's gaming or gambling or whatever, you know, as soon as you have a game that is easily exploitable by the sharks, such that they're basically eating all the fish, the game dies quickly. Mm-hmm. You need to give everyone a fair enough chance. Yes, there's advantages to be had, and that's the reason why, you know, we're so into it, is because we think we have some kind of advantage. I got to tell you, my first 10 days have not been good. But I, you know, whether that's random variation or whatever, but there's so much more. It's so much more open now for strategy and for people to come in and have a good day or a good week, whether or not their process was good. And I think overall it's a good thing. And it kind of gets to, we get in this argument every year with my buddies with fantasy football about how it's just so luck based and how it's unfair and how this guy had the best roster. And so, you know, therefore he should be winning. And I always fall on the side of no, this is the randomness is what makes it fun. If it was just the best team on paper, then okay, fine, let's do an award for that. But that's boring. That's to me, that's not where the excitement is. And to me, DFS is an extension of that. There's advantages to be had, but now they're beneath the surface. people can't just spend 5 minutes looking at matchups and be done with it. So to me, that's once again an opportunity. It's way cool.
Look, I hate obviously losing, and it can be very frustrating. You know, I've taken some of the worst starts of the year on the chin in DFS. Kendall Graveman, Matt Latos. You know, I've had some of those.
Taiwan Walker.
I've avoided both of those, thankfully, but I've had pretty much
the first one got me. Yeah.
Pretty much every other negative start out there, negative score start out there, I've had on a roster. And then of course Carlos Carrasco, he suffers that injury, which sucks. And at that point, you're not even caring that you got hit on the DFS because you're just hoping the dude is okay. So I've been there, you know. But on the other end of that is watching your guy bat at 11:30 a late game. Whoops, turned on my automatic desk there and started lowering it down. Watching your guy bat in the late game, late innings, and nobody ahead of you has him, and if he gets a base hit, you're gonna move way up. That at bat right there is so freaking exciting. And as much as I love season long fantasy, you can't get that excitement until September in terms of this at bat means so much. Because you're just, you know, you're following your team and it matters. They all matter, but they don't carry the same weight as one at-bat or one pitch can in DFS. And I freaking love that excitement. It just changes the game for me and makes me enjoy it so much more. I hate losing, like I said, but it's going to be part of it. And if you can't handle kind of the variance of it, you probably shouldn't play. Or if you're just playing for fun and you don't care about the variance, that's fine too. But if you're trying to play it to grind out and win some cash – you have to understand that it's going to be kind of – there are going to be ups and downs.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on it making it – you know, watching the game that much more fun. As if I needed to have more fun watching baseball.
Right.
Perfect example, last night we had the late night game with the Giants and the D-backs, and I needed to get the win from Archie Bradley. So I just needed, you know, Addison Russell to close it down. Just close it down.
Addison Reed, you know, and he could anybody, not.
And, or sorry, Addison Reed. Wow, nice. I made the totally different slip. Yeah, so Addison Reed, you know, I just need him to shut it down, and he didn't. And yeah, that's a bummer and everything, but it was so exciting. It was, you know, there was so much anticipation there, and that is what makes it so much fun for me.
Yeah, honestly, like I said, you know, even when you come out on the wrong end, the thrill, the fun. I don't go out to the clubs or anything like that. This is my entertainment from a budgeting standpoint. You know, used to spend my money going out and doing all that sort of stuff. Well, I still have that money, and now I can put it into something else, and I get just as much fun. Now I'm just being a nerd about how much I love baseball, but it's so great. It's so great, and you mentioned it too. Do we really need another way to enjoy it? Sure, I'll take it. But anyway, Doug, I got to get you out of here. I know you're on a tight window here, so let's go ahead and wrap it up. We'll be back next week to talk more DFS, hopefully have some better news for some of the injury guys that we talked about. But until then, Doug, folks can reach you on Twitter at Doug_Thorburn, me at Sporer. Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes, and we'll talk in a week. How's that sound?
Sounds awesome.
Take care, bud.
All right, late.